All right.
I have a cat digging in a bag next to me, too. That might be it.
The return of the cat.
You know, cats need to learn math, too.
Welcome to Infinite Insights, the podcast designed for all TK-12 math teachers.
I am Maggie Peters, math consulting teacher for the Rincon Valley School District here in Northern California.
Sounded kind of regal there, Maggie. Hi. So I am Dwayne Hobbit, math coordinator for Merced County Office of Education.
Every other week, Dwayne and I get a little silly, and we... share some new math research studies or articles or some other thing that we'll talk it over, bounce ideas off of each other, and think about how to implement them in the classroom.
Yep, that's right. So, how are you
We're
doing?
We're off to a rocky start today, Dwayne.
I know. You know, here it is. The reason I'm struggling, because this is a long article. Like, it's a long research paper. And we're only on question 5.
And there's 10 of them.
Yes.
Maybe we can take a break. This is a good midway, like, you know, midway break after number 5. And then we'll come back to it later.
Yeah, we could role model, like, actual what we would recommend our teachers do, which is read research, but when you get tired, put it down.
Yes.
And so... Maybe we'll take a moment and put it down and then grab a glass of red wine or something. Because that's, you know, you put something down, you got to pick something up. So I'm thinking red wine.
Okay, perfect. I could do that.
Or beer. I don't know. Maybe a beer.
How about both? One red wine glass plus one beer bottle equals 2 alcoholic beverages.
And 2
okay. Maybe I've had some already. How we digress. I haven't really. But.
Right. Well, let's get this started. So, okay, I'm gonna do a little bit of the update. So, or the background. So, Eric, our good friend Eric Lee from, I think he's from Canada, by the way. I don't know if we said that, but I think he's from Canada. But anyway, our good friend Eric Lee had recommended that we do this, we do a series of 10 podcasts on this PISA report by the OECD. And basically, it's a big old huge 90 some odd page document that essentially takes all that PISA data, and we use that data to answer 10 basic kind of typical questions a teacher might ask. And so today we are on question 5. So when we're done with this, we will be halfway done. I'm kind of feeling good about that. Aren't you, Maggie?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Halfway done.
Yeah. All right. So what's the question?
Oh, no. I'm so sorry. My cat's just had an argument. So today's question, can I help my students learn how to learn mathematics?
You got it. So, and, you know, we all know. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, they just start off by kind of explaining what a teacher's role is, and that's to recommend and encourage the use of specific learning strategies that are the most beneficial for learners. But to keep in mind that no one learning strategy is perfect for all learners or the situations that you're giving them. And so PISA kind of found out through questioning and stuff that really students who approach mathematics in a strategic way are shown to have higher success rates on all types of math problems, regardless of their difficulty. And so then that kind of indicates that the teacher needs to needs to give you know, today is just okay. needs to give those kids, different strategies to pull from when they are approaching it strategically.
Yeah. So like the short answer is, can we help students learn how to learn mathematics? And the answer is yes. Not terribly surprising. That's kind of why teachers have been in the business for 200 years in this country, is because we know we can help students learn how to learn math. But now we have data that says so. So yay, it makes it easier to go to work, I guess. but I did think it was weird that they were this learning how to learn. To me, I've always thought of that as metacognition, but they in this report kept calling it control strategies. And I had to look that up because I had no idea what the heck they meant when they were talking about control strategies, because that sounded to me like classroom management. And it's like, that doesn't seem to make sense. Mm-mm. So when they're talking about control strategies, they're talking about things that they're learning strategies, and they are part of the metacognition family. Like other things that are part of that is like memorization. And in our next, well, in a future episode, we're going to talk about elaboration, which is like being creative in your problem solving. But these are all metacognition strategies. And examples are like allowing students to set their own goals and track their learning progress and stuff like that. So
and activities that would help that would be like organizing their materials and creating a study plan and reflecting on the learning strategies that they used and how that helped them become efficient. And it almost to me sounded like study skills.
Yeah. Yeah, it really did. And I guess study skills as it specifically pertains to math, maybe. I don't know. So I was really grappling with this one. So I dug into some other OECD reports that had similar kinds of that focused on the same kind of a question about this control strategies and metacognition and all that. And so what I did learn, so in this study, the report asks students to answer these four kind of statements to measure to what extent do students themselves use these control strategies. So the five questions or the five statements that students were asked were, when I study for a math test, I try to work out what are the most important parts to learn. And then students were supposed to rate, I think it was on a 4-point scale, the extent to which that statement is true. And then another one was, when I study mathematics, I make myself check to see if I remember the work I have already done. Then another one is, I try to figure out which concepts I still have not understood properly. And then another statement was, when I cannot understand something in mathematics, I always search for more information to clarify the problem. And then the last statement was, when I study mathematics, I start by working out exactly what I need to learn. And so they looked at the student responses to these five statements to measure how much students are using these control strategies. Mm-hmm. And then once they know how much the kids are using these strategies, then we compare that with the student's performance on the test. And we can figure out, well, how much does this help in math? And I don't know. We found that the United States, we're right around average in terms of all the countries and in terms of how students respond to those statements. That it's this, our students are basically, it's just a twinge less than average. I thought it was interesting that countries at the top of the list where students are really likely to report using these strategies, things like China and Japan and Hong Kong. And to me, those are like major, major powerhouses. And I thought, oh, well, let's look at the bottom of the list. And sure enough, you see things like there are countries like Jordan and Tunisia and Qatar. So I'm like, okay, these are not exactly countries known to be powerhouses at math. So is that the pattern? If you want to be a good country at math, use these strategies. But it turns out it's not quite that simple, because Korea, which is also a math powerhouse, they did not report, have, you know, they didn't have their students report using these control strategies. So it doesn't seem like this is like a magic bullet, like some of the other things we've done.
No. And I think the title throws you, because the title says, can I help my students learn how to learn math? But really, like, even in the questions that they were asked, it's like, when I study, when I cannot understand something, when I study, like, okay, I can give them as a teacher study skills and metacognition skills, but it's up to the individual student to use those. So is it in essence really what I as a teacher can do?
Right. I'm looking for things like, give me a teacher routine or a teacher strategy that I can employ that engages kids and causes them to learn. And this is not that.
No. And like, even the, you know, at the end of the article, it always tells us like what we as teachers can do. It's very, I don't want to say generic, but it's like, make sure that your own teaching doesn't prevent students from adopting control strategies. So don't, you know, don't put too much of your spin on it, or else they won't be able to learn these study skills. Right?
Right. Not super helpful is all I was saying.
Right. The second one is, familiarize yourself with the specific activities in the category of control strategies. So once I understand what they are, I can then help them, but I'm not supposed to sway them too much.
Yeah.
You know, like, I do like this one. For example, you might have your students work in groups to create a study plan for an upcoming exam. But that's something I feel like, especially in high school, that's what study halls do. That's what that homework group does. And maybe I'm looking at it wrong. Maybe I am the one who should be helping them do those things. But if I'm supposed to be teaching them content, I feel like that might be a different strand, maybe? I'm not sure.
Continue,
because I was going to go on to the next point, which I can totally see, but go ahead.
Do it. Well, I was going to say when we, that groups, when we have students work in groups, okay, this is good. Of course, that's fine. I was really hoping that this article, this question would really give us some specific math ideas. Like, okay, they're going to work in groups to create a study plan. Give me a mathy related example of what that might look like. And they didn't. And because I know that's legit, having students study in groups, because maybe 5 years ago, there was a study that came out studying freshmen from Cal, UC Berkeley, freshmen from Cal Berkeley who dropped out versus freshmen at Cal who did not drop out. And they're like, all of these kids are super duper smart. That's how they got into Berkeley in the first place. But what characteristics can we identify in the kids who drop out versus the freshmen who stay in? And they found that the freshmen who stayed at Berkeley were far more likely to study with a group of friends, and that the freshmen who dropped out of Berkeley were far less likely to study in groups. They were equally likely to study, but they tended to study all by themselves. So there's legit, stuff to this. It just didn't knock my socks off like I was hoping it would.
Right. And, you know, we use in my district, Engage New York, we've talked about that before, but one of the things that it's always talking about is when your students start to seem to struggle, put them into groups so that they can have some math discourse and come up with some questions that might help them, or have peer-to-peer. Even John Hattie says peer-to-peer has a pretty good effect size on student learning. So working in those groups actually does you know, help. But I think it's because of the next point, which is encourage students to reflect on how they learn. Because if they know how they learn, and when they're reflecting or meta, you know, it's that metacognition again, and they can discuss it with another human and bounce ideas off of, it becomes much more readily accessible, because it's now a memory. It's associated with feelings that you've had instead of just like words on a page.
Sure.
Or numbers on a page in this aspect.
Well, learning is social, and the more social you can make it, the more kids are going to learn. That's how we learn. We learn in groups. We learn by bouncing ideas off of one another. We learn from watching other people. This is how we do it. So yeah, it totally makes sense. Now, I did think, though, bumping up a little bit on the article, they were saying, okay, well, what's the benefit of doing these control strategies? And they said, well, like, you know, there's some strategies that there's some evidence that says kids who tended to answer those five statements earlier, that I do that. The kids tend to score a little bit higher on math tests, specifically the PISA.
Mm-hmm.
But the big heads up is kids who use these strategies also were more likely to report math anxiety.
Yeah, especially on the more difficult problems, math problems, because it gave them too much of a box that they couldn't be creative. Yeah.
Yeah. So when they were kind of being forced to, like, I try to figure out which concepts I still have not understood, or I always search for more information. Those things are good, but they also start to contribute to a kid's anxiety, mm-hmm. is what research is saying. So heads up to teachers, maybe we might be aware of offering these strategies to kids, but put it in its place, because making it seem more important than it really is might lead to anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like any teaching endeavor, use it not sparingly, but don't use it all the time, because then it won't, you know, it's not going to be effective if you use it all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe it's going to work for just a subset of your kids and not all the kids. So you got to kind of throw a lot of mud at the wall and see what sticks.
Can I really?
Yeah, that's how I do it.
All right. Well, I think it's time to wrap up this edition of Infinite Insights. Dwayne, what are your closing thoughts?
I'm tired of this episode. No, it's like, okay, learning strategies, study skills, important, but really I think I'm just left wanting to talk about more math specific instructional strategies. So I'm looking forward to that in the future. How about you, Meg?
You know, I concur. I totally, yeah. I just, I feel like I need a break from this particular study. maybe coming back to it, because I do find myself, after we talk about these things, saying, oh yeah, in the PISA article that we read, like on memorization, you know, I'm able to pull some data when having conversations with people, but I just, it's a lot. So I agree. I think it's time to move on.
Yeah. Yeah. For a break. And we take a break. And, you know, the thing is, so when we start to sign off and tell everybody to hit the subscribe button and stuff, the one thing I'm going to say is for the eight people who listen to our episode each time we post one, woohoo, eight, you know, keep reading the research. And when it gets a little boring, put it down and look for something else to read. Because I agree with you, Maggie. As I go about doing my job working with districts and down here in Merced, I find myself suddenly quoting little bits of factoids from this article and other articles that you and I have done. So I want all teachers to be really aware that their responsibility is to do some reading on the research, because it's going to pay off.
Or listen to us every week.
Yeah, that's true. Read our little synopsis on theothermath.com, because, you know, read it there because it's a synopsis. Maybe it's not the whole research. So read our little Reader's Digest version of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So everybody, don't forget to hit that subscribe button, please. You know, because we have like 10 listeners. So we want to go.
I thought it was 8. Did we just get 2 more in those 2 sentences?
Oh, no, I was rounding up. It made me feel bad. 8 sounded so pitiful. So I started rounding up. Pretty soon, if we keep talking, I'll round 10 up to 20. And then, you know, pretty soon we'll have 4,682 listeners. If, you know,
I'll just start.
It's like a fish story. But hit that subscribe button. Send us a message either through Twitter. You know, I'm at D. Hobecker, and Maggie is at Pele Lover 1. Send us a message through the little podcast subscribe message thingy, or, you know, whatever.
Anything. And I wanted to throw out there, Dwayne and I have been tossing an idea back and forth about timed math tests. Now, we did an episode before, but it keeps coming up about math tests and anxiety, and, you know, teachers are still using it. And if you are a teacher that uses them and truly, truly believes it helps the kids, and you do it in a manner that doesn't necessarily freak the kids out, we would love to chat with you. We want to see the other side of this thought. So if you would be willing to talk with us, like either on a podcast or in an interview style, give us a shout out, you know, call us out on Twitter, do something so that we can get a hold of you. Cause we'd really like to talk to you and get somebody else's idea on the other side.
Yes. Yes. And we promise to be nice. It won't be some sort of attack thing. It'll be nice.
No, because we're learners, and we definitely want to, you know, there's 2 sides to every story. So.
Yeah. Yeah. The right side and the wrong side. And so we want to let somebody be wrong. I'm just kidding. No. I want to hear. And I think you do too. So we want to kind of open that up, that invitation. That's a good idea. Thank you, Maggie. I didn't think of that.
Yeah.
So thank you. So as
usual, happy Halloween. All right, and we'll see you every other Monday here at Infinite Insights.
All right, see you later, Maggie.
Bye.